Good. Welcome everyone to today's Bond Oversight Committee. It is Thursday, November 6th, if you can believe that. The first month of the year is behind us. Welcome to 2020. So much to do. I'm going to have a roll call in just a moment. But if you are here for the first time, we would ask you to sign in, and there should be a packet of information or at least a agenda so that you can follow along with what is happening. And for the sake of continuity and consistency, I'm Dr. Stephen Holt, and I facilitate our process. This is a meeting that is open to the public. It is not a public meeting. What that means is that you have an opportunity to sit in, listen to, and observe the work of the Bond Oversight Committee. At some point, there will be an opportunity for public comment, and our request is that if you want to have public comment, public testimony, that you sign up and that you stick to the topics that are being addressed today. If there are things you're concerned about that are not being addressed today, that are not on the agenda, there are staff members from Portland Housing Bureau that are here that could help to facilitate conversations offline. And I'm going to ask Portland staff, Portland Housing Bureau, if you identify yourselves by merely raising your hand. These are the folks you want to talk to afterwards. So, I think we've covered that. Let's do a roll call with those who are at the table, beginning with our Bond Oversight Committee.
Did I have to press something? Yes. The green button? Okay, yeah. Thank you. Annalise Sickler, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Susan Emmons, Bond Oversight Committee member.
Good morning, I'm Alan Lazo with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, a Bond Oversight Committee member. The vice chair.
Vice chair. All about titles.
Good morning, Todd Struble. Bond Oversight Committee Chair.
Yes.
I don't know if there's space to talk, that we'll have time to talk, but I just wanted to kind of note that I was appointed by Commissioner Fish, and this will be our first Bond Oversight Committee since his passing. I just want to take a moment to recognize that and appreciate him for his trust in me to be a part of this important public and civic service. So, thank you.
Thank you. Portland Housing Bureau staff.
Stacey Jeffries, Portland Housing Bureau.
Okay, press the mic.
Tanya Wolfersberger, Portland Housing Bureau.
Molly Rogers, Portland Housing Bureau. Shannon is coming from another meeting over at City Hall, so she should be here shortly, and she, of course, would echo with what Todd just mentioned in terms of the incredible leadership of Commissioner Fish, and she may want to say a few words later.
Good morning, Jennifer Chang, Portland Housing Bureau, and apologies, I might need to leave this meeting a little early.
Thanks, everyone. Jill.
Jill Chen, Portland Housing Bureau. Good to come on.
There Jill goes. Chen, Portland Housing Bureau.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? All right. I'm going to ask the Bond Oversight Committee if you have had an opportunity to review the meeting summary. Or if you need to take a few moments. A few moments to look at the meeting summary, and then once you are satisfied, someone will make a motion to accept them.
I move that we accept the meeting summary notes as presented.
Moved by Susan to accept.
I will second.
Excellent. And we don't do it necessarily, we haven't been doing this any formal voting, but if everyone's in agreement, mere nod of the head, we're good to go. Excellent. Thank you very much.
I was gone.
You're
using or abstaining myself.
Okay.
Since you asked, Doctor.
I did ask. Thank you very much. Well, we will proceed. Our next item, our first item, the administrative item, Jennifer. Thank you.
So good morning again. So there are two items that we'd like to cover with the committee this morning that are administrative. And the first is approving a proposed update to the BOC quarterly meeting schedule. And the second is discussing the updated role of the BOC starting this year, which is summarized in a memo that was sent out to you and is also contained in your packet. It's entitled Updated BOC Oversight and Advisory Roles. So those are the two items we'll cover in this section. So for the first, just the upcoming BOC meeting dates. Initially, we had proposed that our April meeting was going to be a community meeting and held at the evening hours. That is what it's been in the last couple of years. But staff would like to propose swapping the date of hosting the community meeting from April to the July meeting. And the reason for this is it would allow us time to be able to reach out to the new funded bond projects through the last solicitation and have them invited and participate. We thought it'd be a great opportunity in July to have those projects come and kind of do like exhibition or just kind of have tables and have it open to community members to be able to learn about those projects, where they'll be located and who they'll be serving. So that time would allow us to reach out to them and also have the projects be able to compile that information, and they'll be further along in their pre-development or development phase. So that means April would be just a regular morning time meeting, April 9th from 9:30 to 11:30, and then in July we would do the evening meeting, still with a TBA on the location. So I think if there's any thoughts or questions or concerns regarding that, I'd love to hear that.
I support that. I have a baby due in April, so.
So it works out well.
Yeah, it works out better. I should be back to work by July.
Hopefully back to sleep by July.
It looks like I might miss the April meeting.
Thoughts, Oversight Committee? Is everyone in agreement? Are we okay with that? Mm-hmm. Switching out. Mm-hmm. Alan? Yeah? Okay. Thank you.
Great. So then we'll move on to the next item, which is the updated roles of the BOC and starting this year. So at our last meeting, we had several members discussing and talking with staff about the BOC's updated role, given that now we have the majority of the bond funds allocated and we have many, many projects that are either in operation or in the development pipeline. And so staff took these comments, and we also met with Todd and Ellen, a separate meeting just to gather further thoughts about what the BOC, how we could articulate that and to clarify that moving forward. So we put together a memo that outlines updated roles moving forward, and I'd like to review kind of the key points of this memo, which really focus on the areas of oversight and advisory roles of the committee with the projects and with the overall bond program, and how staff plan to keep the committee updated and how, in the months ahead. So I'd like to highlight that, but before then I'd want to check if everyone had a chance to read the memo, and if not, we can have a few minutes to go for you to read over that. Did everyone? Okay. So the committee will continue to advise on issues of implementation of the policy framework goals and bond investments, and this is per the initial Bond Oversight Committee charter. And so the first page of the memo lists several of those key responsibilities, which include overseeing implementation and ensuring that the policy and programming goals of the framework plan are consistent and aligned with how the funds are being spent. Additionally, just some other ongoing important responsibilities are, you know, tracking metrics of bond investments, so progress towards our goals and expenditures, and then also providing annual reporting to City Council and financial oversight. So those important roles will continue. And some updated roles for the committee starting this year, given that there's so many projects in development, is we really want to provide the committee with very regular updates and opportunities to know progress on the programs and be able to provide feedback and comments and advice through that process. So what we are planning is that staff will provide and coordinate with these projects, provide the committee with regular updates in three main ways. One is a bond project dashboard report. And so there was an attachment of it in the memo. I know it's very small. Tanya and Jill are going to review this in, a little later in the meeting. But it's basically a dashboard of all the bond projects, all of the production targets, the amount of bond funds that are currently it has, and what phase in development that the project is, and then also whether or not there are any key things to flag or highlight for the committee. And so we would like to provide this, we plan to provide this report to you on a quarterly basis at every bond, every committee meeting, and that the main focus of you as committee members is to ensure a couple things. One, adherence to the policy framework, so providing guidance and feedback on any areas of major concern or changes if the project is proposing that and how it might impact overall production goals. And the second is fiscal oversight, monitoring that the commitments that were made for each project, including the subsidy amount, you know, per unit, that remains at or, you know, like within what was initially committed. So those are kind of the two areas. A second item that we are planning to have is presentations from individual projects. So, okay. So we have 9 new projects, and they are all in various stages of planning. Some are on a quicker path, and others are slower. But we plan to have every project come before the committee at various stages of their development. Todd, did you have?
Oh, just a quick question. You sure. Need a presentation from staff from, like, Bridge Housing that would come?
Yes, these are samples from Northeast.
Right.
The development team would come, and that would include the owner, developer, and often probably the service partner or partners that are part of that team, and maybe other members of their team. So, so they would come before the committee, provide updates on their project, and focus and kind of key aspects of their, you know, where they are in their phase of development, their community engagement process, their outreach plan in terms of marketing and lease up, and then also their service partnerships. So that would give the committee, that gives the committee opportunity to be able to review several aspects, their outreach and marketing plan, community partnerships, their permanent supportive housing services plan and partners, and also, you know, in future, just the demographics of tenancy after the program is leased up. And so, yeah, that's the area we look to the committee to really provide guidance and advice and or feedback directly to the program teams and also to staff. And then the final report is the bond program expenditure report. And so, again, I know our staff will review this further later in the meeting, but this is one that we provide on a quarterly basis to the committee, and it would provide expenditures and commitments to date by expense type, and that the main area for the committee to review is around fiscal compliance and monitoring, guidance and feedback on items that might significantly impact the bond investments that were allocated or are planned to be expended. So those are the three main ways we like to keep you regularly informed and updated and have your guidance over. So Are there any questions or thoughts regarding that? Something that we may be missing or that you'd like to propose changing?
In terms of reporting, the annual report to City Council, I noticed that you hope to have a draft in March, and then there'll be a time certain. Usually there's a time certain on if you want any of us to go and be part of that.
Yes, correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It just seems tricky with people's schedules.
Yes, so, and we haven't set that date yet, but we will contact you well in advance of once we can secure that time.
Yeah, I think that it was such a robust report last year. Todd and others did a great job of presenting it. I could see the council was really wowed, and it just seems like it's great to keep that momentum. I'm sure that you all have that in mind too, and there's so much good news to report. Okay.
All right. Hey, I drifted off for a second there, but and one of the oversight items was the subsidy amount per unit, right? But it's not on the dashboard report. Is it on this? Is it on the project presentations? We can do some math, obviously, but I'm wondering if that's something that it should be one of the data points.
We can add that. It's not currently on the dashboard as you've already peeked
ahead.
Yes, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're on the dashboard.
Yeah, you peeked ahead, so you noticed that already. But yes, we'll get into that and what else you'd like to see as part of that dashboard. Yeah.
This conversation.
No, I mean, you're correct. It has the total bond investments allocated, but it isn't divided up by. We can update that.
Any other comments from the Oversight Committee? Well, Alan, at least if you're drifting, you're drifting forward. It's a good thing.
I was looking for that sheet of paper, but all right.
Thanks, Jennifer. Is that it? You got some more?
That's it.
Excellent. All right. We will then go to the next item. We'll start with you, Jim.
Okay. Now we will get into the details of that dashboard. So I'll hand it over to Jill to kind of walk you through it, but just as a reminder, these are all of the projects that will be included on that dashboard, including all of the projects that were recently awarded through the bond opportunity solicitation.
Thank you. As you mentioned, Alan, this is a dashboard. I think the writing is pretty small, so I'm going to take my glasses so I can see it. The dashboard here includes, we thought, key criteria, key information that the Bond Oversight Committee needed to know, meaning the most important items are the total number of units sold, or total number of units funded, the mix, the number of family size units, number of 30% units, and the number of PSH, because those were in the bond measure. And what is our targeted metrics. Other items that, just to make sure that we saw, was the status. You would see there's a green item in the middle sort of column, that circle. This is our sort of snapshot of what is it going up, or is it moving forward in the right direction? The goal is, if something is not quite going right, we will have it yellow. And if something is really not going well, then it would be red. So fortunately for us right now, everything is green. And we do have the funding award, which is the bonds, and then other PHB funds. So the other PHB funds are in the brackets. Yes, Todd?
Oh, I just, maybe you'll get to this, but I was just curious, like, what, can you give some specific examples of what might cause a project to go yellow or red?
Imagine how much you
write that down. Cost overruns, I'm sure, and timelines, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
When a project is meeting significant gaps that they may not be able to meet. When you all worked with us to approve the bonds, there was only one project that had come in with a gap. And that was the Los Adelitos project. And we all know that they're going to go into the lift, OHCS lift, for January, now February. So that is one that we know that has a gap. So if there's a significant gap in which they have not been able to get funding, that could become a yellow. If something is red, it means that they're really, it should not go from green to red. So that if it's something going from orange to red, it means that they're much more at risk of not being moved forward, like construction issues, funding issues, maybe one of their partners have fallen apart or something. And that's right, unanticipated environmental issues. All of these right now are in the process of doing their environmental reviews and in pre-development. One of the things I did want to mention, and I've mentioned this to Susan before, is that we're very pleased to say that the Susan Emmons, thank you, Susan, is the first project that's already been approved for pre-development loan with PHB. So that one, we do expect all of them to come in at some point. So in this little chart, you'll also see that there's a financial closing date. That is an estimated based on best guess right now from the developer and based on what we're seeing with our senior construction coordinators in their owner, architect, and contractor meetings. I can already see that some of them may be a little bit slipping only because things like historical review, land use review, these may start taking a little bit more time than everyone expected. In terms of, for us, when we look at this, I did want to talk about some risk and opportunities. And we already mentioned the potential cost increases or delays. There may also be potential changes in design because we all know that code is changing. There's a residential infill project. There's a better housing by design code changes that may allow some of these projects to have higher density or to sort of change their configuration. We are asking all of our partners to keep at a minimum all their commitments to the two bedrooms and the number 30% units and the total number of units, meaning they can only go up. They can't go down.
Yeah.
Okay. The other one that we may come back is there will be probably some opportunities because of the code changes. And as they go into the further environmental review, they may find that they can actually maybe squeeze in more or maybe change some things to do different things. Any other questions? Yes, Annalise.
I'm curious, has there been any concerns or mention about the corporate activity tax that the state has levied and how it's impacting the construction costs? Or do folks already factor that in? I was like trying to remember the timeline.
It was more impactful, I think, on our existing projects that was in construction. My understanding is these folks have put some of that fluff in, but also construction for affordable housing was exempt.
Okay.
I think that's the one you're talking about, right?
To clarify, I'm not talking about the Portland Clean Energy Fund. I'm talking about the state corporate activities tax. So yes, I believe PSEF is exempt, but this is a different question.
Yes, and I'm not sure. So that is one of the risks. We're looking at cost increases that potentially may happen. So one of the things we are looking at carefully is if they are, as they go into the design development, what are the costing and have they costed all these variable changes? Because some of them may not have done it because they were costing rather early in the stage.
Yeah. I think what we're hoping is be able to present to you at the next meeting a set of criteria that we would deploy as we look at these projects, you know, in this iterative phase that they're in and they're getting all kinds of information and things will change. Particularly with some of the zoning changes, we know there's a couple projects that could significantly increase the density on some of the use of the land. We want to be able to present, we want your blessing of what we should be considering, what variables we should take into account. We want to have that opportunity for all the proposers, not just one at a time. But there are some time-sensitive decisions we would have to make because this it changes all the architectural design and make a pretty, and they need to know certain things to move forward because it's one of those critical path decision points. So what we're hoping is that we can look at some criteria, present that to you, and then actually potentially apply that to a couple projects that we know will could potentially increase density and get your input on that in April.
Yeah. Have some follow-ups about that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was going to go back to what Jill had said, which I think is important about, which it's really interesting to think about, I think what you just said, Molly, about, you know, what considerations would there be given that there might be some opportunities out there? And so is there a mechanism for, so are you asking them, for instance, is there an agreement with the developer that says we won't go below the minimum number of family units that we proposed, or is there a mechanism like that, or are you coming to us with criteria for that, or are you just trying to lock it in? What process do you want to go through? Because I think it's an important point, because it does kind of reset the table on that conversation, right?
So what we have done with each of the projects so far is they have a reservation of funds. So they have a reservation of funds from the Housing Bureau with a letter that outlines all of the terms and conditions upon those reservation of funds, which includes the unit counts, the unit mixes, the dollar amounts attached, as well as any other conditions that we had determined throughout the process needed to be identified or further information that we wanted to make sure was understood in the reservation letter. So we're going to, when we get to the portion where we talk to you about expenditures and funds remaining, I thought we would be able to have a little bit of an idea with you about looking at some of the buckets that are remaining and kind of overlaying the pre-conversation for this. It is very common that projects change. There are very few projects that over time, as submitted, end up looking precisely the same as what happens in financial close. But as Molly indicated, there is one particular project that was upzoned most recently and could add a significant number of units. And we want to be able to make sure that we have a clear process to bring in those requests, look, do a feasibility review of those requests. Our goal would be to, it would impact the funds available, the remaining funds available. So, these are decisions I think we have to make somewhat on a case-by-case basis, but we want to have factors that we're looking at that we talk to you about, and we're working on what those are and would present those factors, essentially, at our April meeting, because there will be some opportunities based on zoning. And then, frankly, there is something that we have already been planning on with 30th and Powell that we wanted to preview with you. But I think it'll be helpful when we get to the, not to jump around, but I think it'll be helpful to have that discussion when you see the available funds and kind of where we're balancing. So we can speed ahead to that, or we can wait to that portion and talk about that.
Apparently it's bad to move ahead when it's not time.
I'll open it up for you here if you want to.
And I will add, actually, on one of the projects, this is Susan Edmonds, NHA have already told us they're adding two more units, but not adding any additional, not requesting any additional funds because they need that for the two managers' units. So it's part of what the population needs and also the upzoning. So those are the kind of things that so far we've approved, the adding of two additional units because it makes perfect sense. And we're not being asked for additional funding.
That's right. The world would just stay still and make it easier.
Any other questions on the dashboard or the projects?
Or requests for more info on there?
My request is in, but we'll just make a comment. When I originally looked at this, one of my big things has been around context. And you know, when we list the number of units, for us in oversight, and I think also for public oversight, you know, what folks are interested in is where does this fit into the context of the full bond? But when I look at this sheet now, I'm not sure that this is where we put that information, right? I mean, it's I think this serves a slightly different purpose. So it was just kind of interesting that I had that change because I just looked on it, you know, on my phone, and it was like, oh, it'd be nice to know out of this is, you know, 27 two-bedroom units out of the 200 that we need, or whatever that number was. Right? Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that I think this is serving a different purpose than that. And so, I think we have that information in other dashboards, other places. If I'm not mistaken.
Well, we do total it on the back.
Yeah, so and so that's the other. I did think that would be the place you could put it. It's just the row below that has the bond overall targets, so we know. Mm-hmm. And I think that will come into play when, if any of the projects shift, right? Because right. That's one of the things we'll need to know is what is the impact on the overall targets. And so I don't know if this is the place that we would be tracking that or not, but that's one of the considerations we'll have to make, right, in that criteria. So it'd be nice to see it. I don't know if this already has a lot of information.
Our intent with this is to try to simplify and keep you updated on a quarterly basis as to all the projects, yeah. As to are they generally on track? Are there any changes that are occurring? Are there funding gaps? Are there things that we're seeing? So that you're knowing kind of at a snapshot, as I think we say dashboard, to try to simplify and keep you abreast. But yes, all of those things are going to be trade-offs if anything starts to change.
Yeah, and I appreciate that snapshot piece, especially from a development perspective. I think that's important so we know what the status of these are, the individual projects are. But yeah, in the bigger picture, I think we'll also have to be watching that. I don't know if this is the document that gives us that information or not.
I mean, ideally, when something is in the yellow or red, you guys would all be having a much more engaged discussion about what exactly is happening, including having maybe the developer and his partners talk about what it is that they intend to do.
If I could maybe clarify, or just a little bit more depth on that, in terms of like who decides whether it's on track or not, I'm looking at kind of the fiscal oversight part of what we know. The PHB, I'm assuming, is determining whether something's a green light. Is obviously in conversation with the developer, but from the public's perspective, are they going to be able to, what assurances does the public have? Like, if PHB says it's green, it's green. Like, will the developer have any say in that? Or how do we know if there's tensions between the developer and PHB? If it's like, nope, everything's good.
We always have tensions. What we're looking at is certain metrics, like are they on track for their schematics? Are they on track for their design? Have they gone forward for their early assist? Is anything showing up in their environmental reviews saying that there's some issues, i.e. the soil is not compacting or something that could mean big dollar amounts, right? So the team is working side by side with the developer on the constructability and design side, but also on the financing side. So we'll be able to say, if there's a tax code change and our LIHTC assumption was say 96 cents on the dollar, and it changed and it's now 85 cents on the dollar, that's a big gap. And therefore they're gonna come back to us or OHCRs or some other funding source for a gap. And therefore we would put there and say, this may become chartreuse or maybe orange. It's getting a little hot in here. We probably need to start having more conversations with them.
So Todd, just to clarify that we have a financial underwriter assigned to each of these projects, and we have a construction coordinator. So their construction coordinator, as Jill has indicated, is tracking these projects, meeting with the architectural teams, meeting with the teams at real time at their meetings about the constructability of the buildings. And then once they start construction and we fund the building, they'll be tracking that process as well. And doing draws on the money based on where they are in terms of the construction process. I think it would be very unusual, though we may have tensions, I think it would be unusual to have situations where the teams don't necessarily agree that we're slightly off track. I think sometimes where we may have disagreements on, especially if there's a funding gap that they're trying to seek, we would have to put something potentially in red if they're over budget, and they may have a little bit more confidence in their ability to close that gap. So that said, I think that, you know, that's our fiduciary responsibility to monitor those projects in that way. So the other thing is, none of these have been funded with bond dollars. So just so you know, the pre-development funds are not coming out of Portland Housing bond funds. We will only fund these projects when bond dollars at financial close. So once all of the details are known, once all of the funding is there, once the plans, the permits, they're ready to go on construction is when they actually get funded with bond dollars. So there is a little bit less risk, essentially, until that actually happens. Right now it's a reservation of funds, and when we deem they're eligible for pre-development, meaning they're on track, we'll be funding out of another source, which ultimately would be paid back with bond dollars. But just so you have a sense of some of the financial mechanisms we have in place to ensure that money isn't expended if there's something that is off track.
And one of the other things to mention is the stage that all the projects are in from the bond solicitation, this is a highest risk stage. That's why, like Shannon said, it's worth not funding at their bonds. So once it reaches financial close, the contracts with the general contractor is signed as a GMP, meaning you cannot go beyond the maximum price. So at that point, the construction is not a price issue anymore, it's a construction issue, and they shouldn't have any, because it would have already gone through permits, it's already been vetted, designs are done. There may be some value as here and there, or, you know, movements, but the construction costs at that time, all the financing is done.
So in terms of the July community meeting, where you'd have a lot of these projects represented, and it seems like your timeline, they'll be well on their way to close. Would you anticipate, if a project originally experienced neighborhood opposition before it got to you, would you anticipate any of that? Or I'm just trying to imagine. The Susan Emmons. Definitely opposed by the neighborhood. and you walk that, I walk it usually once a week, and there are now for sale signs up on some of the adjacent properties that were so worried about their Victorian homes, which is sad, but I just wonder about that. Maybe it's not a justified one.
We do work with the developers to work in their community outreach, and most of them are able to get through that process and get their partner, meet their neighborhoods, on board. It's going to be a long process. Some of them have had more NIMBYism than YIMBYism. So certainly before it goes to City Council for any of these approvals, we actually, in the City Council ordinance, actually talk about, and the impact statement has a section that talk about communities and the community outreach. So that actually does become part of our approval process. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some of them do have more, some of them have less.
Prepared to move forward.
Yeah, I'm going to do an update on one of the things that we've been grappling with for a little bit of a while. Is part of our bond opportunity solicitation was an offer of technical assistance for those development teams to help them meet their DMWESD goals. So Commissioner Hardesty talks about it as alphabet soup, but it's so
for disadvantaged minority women, emerging small business, and I'm trying to remember what.
Service disabled veterans.
We've got to put that in our memo and write it all out. So we have higher goals than the city at large for our contracting work. PHB set a 30% goal for 2021, incrementally built up from 20%. And we also have created a goal of 20% of professional services, being of a certified or COVID company. And we also look at workforce and apprenticeship hours through the city's program. But we knew that it's one thing to set a goal, it's another thing to work with the teams to actually achieve that goal. There's a lot of various demand right now, and a lot of construction projects, and there's also a continuing need to get a lot of those companies certified through the state process. And so what we've been doing actually in the past several months is working with our sister agency, Prosper Portland. They have a series of different equity programs and loans and grant programs, and they also have done some work with some of those TA providers already that tend to work with our contractors and subcontractors. And it really seemed like a really nice pairing and enhancement of the work that we were wanting to do as well. It's kind of one of those opportunities for government to actually not duplicate one another and blend resources and leverage each other's resources. And they're poised to be the recipient of a 1% of construction project costs going into a pot of money that's going to be called Community Opportunities and Enhancements Program, COEP. Mm-hmm. So we've been having conversations with them about using our $300,000, so we blended with that 1%, which is a great leverage, and we'll be doing a RFP this spring that will be offering up a series of different technical assistance services and activities. And so we've asked them to include our 10 bond funded projects into that solicitation. So we're in the phase right now with them of, we've got the money in the budget for fiscal year 2021, and we're looking at that requests for proposals narrative and are articulating what the scope of work we would like to have for our bond funded projects. We've had a series of different conversations with our development partners and others, contractors, where they see a void, where they would like to see some additional technical assistance. And it's really often where we are in this phase right now. They're assembling those construction teams. They're looking at those RFPs that they do for construction. They tend to have people already identified. So we're hoping to have a series of starting out with a navigator. A couple of consultants who will come in and help them determine what their actual equity needs will be for that project. So some are gonna be farther along with, say, their subs of like an electrician, and some are gonna be not as far along around maybe connecting with professional services. So we're hoping that Navigator will do more of that assessment piece and connect them up potentially to some of the other Prosper projects or other services like their network of inclusive businesses and also potentially loans and grants. So we're just hoping we're at least can fund that beginning piece, that evaluation and assessment piece for them, and then we need to work with those development teams to see how they'll follow up and how they actually respond to that set of recommendations that we're hoping that the consultants will provide for each of the teams. The other piece of this is we recognize that it's a long-term goal, and we've got projects underway that we need to be accountable for, and we need to report back on our DMWDSB goals. But at the same time, we also want to work with those developers on building that pipeline, thinking about the next set of projects that they've got going on. And some of that is some of the building the small businesses' capacity to be able to take on larger projects and doing that kind of work as well. So we think it's a really nice synergy of our $300,000 gets leveraged into a much bigger set of networks, consultants, services, and other resources that Prosper is really able to provide for us. So that's an update of where we are thinking about getting that technical assistance. We recognize we need to get that done. We need to get going on that starting for July 1st. Prosper is thinking maybe they can even get the contracts executed maybe a month or two earlier than that, depending on the RFP timing. But it pairs really well with when our projects will be thinking about their packages for construction bids and so forth. So yeah, I'm wondering if anyone has any questions or additional feedback for us on that?
I'll just underscore and say thank you for working with Prosper Portland and thinking about, you know, the city's goals in workforce and economic development in the implementation of this bond.
I think it's great. I'm just confused actually how the money, where the money goes. So this is the RF, the request for proposals, is it, are the construction firms or the teams aren't submitting proposals, right? This is a request for proposals to increase the capacity of the Prosper Portland and your collaborative to provide those services to the construction teams, right? And then the construction teams apply to the program to receive technical assistance. Is that how this is working?
So the way that this is going to work is Prosper and PHB will select some consultants to do that navigation and evaluation process of how they're doing. So some people who are experts in equity contracting. Additionally, then what we've done is put a requirement in our bond opportunity solicitation that our selected developers have to work with this TA provider.
Okay.
So we tied it all together in that front. So they won't be surprised, because we've been talking about this with them, but they right now we haven't had anyone identified, so we haven't started that work yet. So we'll do some information sharing with our developers and talk with them about what that kind of evaluation process will look like. But we're hoping our hope is that the provider, the consultants, will create customized plans for each of them.
And did I also hear you say as part of that, so will the scope for the consultants also be outside of the kind of the selected teams in building capacity in other small businesses? So is that also part of the work that Prosper's already doing or planning to do with their mm-hmm. with their program? Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be just the teams that are there or forming. It's the kind of the landscape of the entire construction industry.
They're putting in over $1 million into this pot, so they're going to start off, and they're going to actually, that pot will actually keep growing as other that 1% keeps growing. Yes, so they're really looking at expanding a huge range of services and small business development and expanding their repertoire to do this kind of work. So it's the RFP will be doing that umbrella kind of set of services, and then we'll be more of a smaller carve out within
for
that.
For our section of yeah. folks, okay.
Any other comment from oversight?
Okay, so we just wanted to spend a couple moments talking about your annual progress report that, as Susan mentioned, is right around the corner in terms of when we are thinking about going back to City Council for you to all to present that progress report. It's early February, but we know April will be upon us very, very shortly. So we printed out a copy of last year's progress report just so you could refamiliarize yourselves with what we produced last year. And so really just wanted to go through kind of a timeline of expectations just to say, like, this is the time that we want to start reaching out to you all, getting your feedback and input on how you would like this progress report to evolve for the coming year, to report on all of the activities in 2019, to report on that. So again, is just a refresher. So what we reported last year, we'd love to get some insights on like what you would like to see included in the new report for 2019 and any other maybe updates or revisions or changes to the content, format, whatever, going forward. And then we will, Martha and I, will work closely with you over the next month or two to get those revisions in place, get them ready for a final report and review that we hope to do sometime in March to prepare council documents to go to a council day sometime in April. So with that ado, if you have any initial reactions or feedback or thoughts about how you'd like to help us implement this report with you, that would be great.
Just a reminder that April is also Fair Housing Month. Ooh. That's why you selected April.
It's a good month.
Yeah. What's the timeline on the report again? Where I remember the last one just only include completed, wasn't that right?
So last year's report, which is in your packet, is we chose to do it. It was more than 1 year. We decided to do it kind of from the beginning of implementation 2017 through calendar year 2018 to just bring us up to date. Mm-hmm. So this next progress report will be 2019. I think, you know, clearly we'll have a lot to say about the bond opportunity solicitation work and all the awarded projects. But then we have other framework goals that are included in this report that we'll want to report on and update council on your work. As we're springing this on you kind of in the moment, so I understand if you want to take some time to kind of digest and reflect, and Martha and I will definitely reach out to all of you individually and perhaps as a group to discuss it more, if that sounds like a good next step.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so great is just where we are, the narrative around that we've reached our goals. I mean, this is another really important moment for us to note that and celebrate that, and also that narrative that, but we're not, and you know, we've met those goals, we're not done, right? That there's still work to do ahead, so I guess it's a great opportunity.
Go ahead. Well, as I've said before, I'm particularly interested in the personal story, so if there's a way to reach out to some of the organizations that have placed people and actually be able to tell those a real story, a few real stories. I think that is very strong with City Council, and I think they respond to that. I mean, I know we have to be, it can't be exploitative. It has to be somebody who's willing. I know you have to be really careful about that, but I'd like to see that happen in the presentation, if possible.
Okay, noted, and we will work on that.
You want to talk about storyboarding?
The story?
We're getting some.
Oh, well, we've been already, I mean, naturally collecting, asking our resident services coordinators at the Ellington and Eastbourne side to collect stories. And we have also some stories, you know, from the holiday season and some other art projects that have been happening. So the resident service coordinators at both of our properties that we own directly that are operating have been doing some wonderful work. So, you know, likely that we will definitely take the opportunity to incorporate those elements into the progress report. And I think, you know, to your point, we have a lot to celebrate and a lot to report. So a big part of this will be determining kind of like the future next steps of how we want to present where we're going next. All right, so y'all ready to move on? Okay, fabulous. We move on to some numbers. Get really.
Get Alan going.
Bring it again. Yeah. It's your time. So welcome Mike Johnson up to talk us through the expenditure report.
You remember the graph we showed you the last quarterly meeting? It really just showed at that point in time the projects that we had acquired, so there wasn't a lot of detail to it. And you'll see that this chart has a lot more detail because, since we've been sharing with you, we've been doing quite a bit in terms of awarding funds to projects, and that's really the biggest part of this chart is well over 50% of the bond funds have been committed to projects, in addition to the 20% that we've actually spent already on projects. So once again, we're showing the program delivery amount of the bond, the 7% that was in the ballot measure. The reserves that we set aside, we talked about the last meeting, approximately $22 million. And then there's roughly $24 million remaining. Now you'll see another little tiny slice there you can barely see called net interest and credits. So what happens when we issue bonds is we don't spend them all right away. So for example, the 2019 B series, which we used on Prescott and East Burnside, there's still some money left there, and it's been earning interest. In fact, about $42,000 to date. When we sell the next chunk of bonds in the spring, we won't necessarily be putting all that money out the door initially. We will also earn interest on those funds. So the bond funds remaining are going to fluctuate over time. It's not going to be $24 million in October, it'll be $24 million. That number is going to change as we earn interest. And could provide more opportunities for us, but we'll see what those debt-managed funds are earn us. Though they're managed, we call them debt-managed funds because the city's debt management operation actually manages the investment of those. And they are invested slightly differently than the whole general pool of city funds, and they make a little bit better interest rate. So that's one change you will be seeing over the next few quarterly reports, is that number expanding and contracting as we earn interest on that, on the bonds.
Just a quick question.
Sure.
Sorry. Bond project reserves, is that only for commitments, or is that also divided among the expended?
I think that's still to be determined. I mean, best case scenario, we don't have to dip into those.
So actually, if I might, I'd love to tell you a little bit about, talk a little bit about those. This may be a good jumping off point. So what we did, or what we think is prudent right now, is to reserve a certain amount of funds for project reserves. As you've just heard, there could be changes in the various amounts of units, the numbers going forward, and we want to be conservative and withhold some funding from future funding considerations if we so choose to go forward with another bond solicitation or take another action. We want to make sure that we're holding money and just in case. It would be very unfortunate if we'd made all these plans and then there is some major hurdle or hiccup. So we have looked at each of these projects and essentially reserved a certain portion of funds. Our hope is that we would not have to spend the majority of those funds. One thing that is in those project reservations, the project reserves, is actually that we set aside from the very get-go was additional units at 30th and Powell. And so we're going to be bringing you in April a presentation on 30th and Powell and where we are in the development and design process. And what we have determined, and I think you'll see this in April, is, or we've known for a while, is it's a family-focused property, and we wanted to achieve a little bit greater area for interaction. So play space, parking, and then there were some other considerations with Powell
that had to do with an easement and how at the time of purchase and how we're resolving that easement issue. So that is already built in there. That is not, you know, by giving you that amount, the one thing we do not want to do is send a message that we have money for cost overruns. That's not our intent. But we do know that unexpected things come up, and that is our way of saying that the funds remaining, we should differentiate and do some project reserves while these projects move forward. And in case we want to do another solicitation or another something else with the what we're calling, Mike, you're calling bond funds remaining, correct? Which right. is 2.59% of the funds right now.
So potentially that purple slice, the orange slice, and the little tiny one in there, those could move, as I was saying, and what is left there once we've closed all the projects could potentially be looked at for, as Shannon was saying, something additional in the future. So, but those will change until we get to the next point in time in the whole process.
This is super detailed, but like I guess my question is any of that purple slice for anything that unanticipated that might happen for things that are already in operations like East Burnside and Ellington, or is that only for future projects?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
We have not we had only considered that fund for future projects.
Okay.
So timing wise then, what's the I don't know if you can actually answer this, right, because it's sort of an unknown. What's the horizon for knowing if we aren't going to spend project reserves, if they would convert into, I think the way I would actually term this is uncommitted bond funds, right?
Exactly.
And so does that come, I'm assuming it will come over the life of the projects. So we may not know for a long time, right, until they're actually leased up. So does that fit our timeline for knowing how we would proceed, or?
It would be till they're leased up. It would be when they start construction.
Construction, yeah.
So once the financial close on these projects, which as you can see by the timing, is all expected in 2020
and 2021. The last one is fourth quarter 2021. So we should, knock on wood, everything should be at financial close by the end of next year, if not before.
And we will be bringing you, as things close and we have more certainty, I think we would also potentially start to move funds from project reserves, if they're remaining, into bond funds remaining. But frankly, I think the more prudent thing is we want to make sure these buildings get built and we stay on target. And so that's why we've, you know, in our minds, reserved these. And then I think at some point we can talk about we're not there yet in terms of what to do with the remaining, the bond funds remaining. I think, frankly, we want to get through some of these projects moving forward and having some certainty. And of course, you also know we're in the middle of trying to finalize our IGA with Metro. We just actually had our local implementation strategy approved by the Metro Oversight Committee this week. So we're balancing, you know, the solicitation process with Annalise Stone.
Sorry. It's like a great problem to have.
It's a great problem to
have. It's a really good problem to have. You have so much coming at us.
We have a lot coming at us, but there's, you know, but frankly, there's also capacity issues just in the general overall affordable housing community. So we want to make sure that we're being opportunistic, getting as many units out as we can, but we also need to make sure they get built. So but yes, I think as Mike has explained it, you may see these move over time. And so what we're going to do is talk to you every quarter and provide you this expenditure report where we think we're going. And then, you know, as I mentioned, we do believe there will be a chunk coming out of the project reserves for additional units at Powell. We had not thought about any other additional units coming through other projects. So I think when we start talking about other projects, adding more units or taking more funding other than what we have in projects reserves, it's going to be a conversation about the orange, the bond funds remaining, and whether or not it's prudent for us to, you know, if I think for us, things we'll be looking at is, you know, is it cost effective? Is this the right area we want to put more units? Are we getting any larger family size units? Are we getting any more 0 to 30? So, you know, and a host of other factors, but that's kind of our thinking, and As Molly said, we're going to come back to you in April with that concept a little bit more fleshed out for looking at projects that may want to add units.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it would be really looking at the combination of this pie chart and where things are shaking out, but also with the unit production target goals in mind. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at the whole entirety, understanding the trade-offs, understanding sort of the timing considerations, and then part of this is being able to communicate to our partners that we may or may not have much funds. People keep thinking we can keep doing solicitations all the time, but we're trying to actually create a predictable schedule and a opportunity for folks to understand what criteria we're using for each of these projects.
And it will be tricky with those remaining funds. I mean, it will be a finite amount of funds, and finding projects that slot into the funds remaining will be tricky. Let's say there's $40 million. Do we find two $20 million projects, or do we have a 20 and a 19, and what are we going to do with that leftover $1 million? So every city GO bond that's been done has run into that issue.
Oh,
so, I know the fire one is just finishing up. They were able to be fairly, I'm not sure what exactly they were able to do. They were able to find a project to use the remaining funds. So, because we don't have the bond wasn't built on these are the projects, these are how much they cost, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge for us, but I think we'll be able to get there.
Well, Mike, we did reserve the right in the Metro LAS. We did say we were not planning to commingle any of the funds, so that the Metro bond funds and the housing bond funds, Portland housing bond, would remain separate until potentially the end.
Right.
So in case there were some dangling amount left that were remaining of Portland housing bond, based on the fact that Metro is a little bit behind, we all may choose, depending on the amount, just to put it into a pot with the project under Metro. So that gives us some flexibility, hopefully, just so that we don't have some dangling $7,000 out there. And making sure that we can use everything we've got to the maximum potential. So,
any comments? Oversight Committee. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Speaking of fiduciary responsibility, I'm here to update you on a draft financial audit that we've received. Again, talking about April, but we'll go into more depth in April around the audit findings, because they're not finalized yet. But I am pleased to share a little bit of some preliminary work that our auditors have done. Just a quick background: Harvey Rose and Associates are the auditors that we hired to do our annual financial audit. But the time period that we have used, similar to the first program audit, was really looking at the beginning of the bond, so early 2017, to the end of fiscal year 18. So what's interesting about that time period is we didn't have Measure 102. We didn't have a state constitution that allowed us to deploy general obligation bonds in public-private partnerships. And we are essentially have an audit, draft audit, that is reflecting of a time period when the city was actively acquiring and doing projects on our own. The financial audit covers really only three acquisitions: the Ellington, 105th and Burnside, and Northeast Prescott. So the time period really is, of the findings and the recommendations, is really a reflection of that time when we were in a direct ownership role and doing direct financing of those projects. And at that time, we did have to quickly adopt new procedures and new way of looking at actual real estate transactions. And we had to use guidance from our Office of Management and finance, and how other bureaus that have used general obligation bonds have coded those bond eligibility expenses, and we utilize a lot of those procedures. So our initial feedback to the auditors is that with the passage of 102 and a state constitution and a really completely different way we're deploying the bond resources and ownership structures, and us, our role is completely shifted, we've asked them to revise some of those recommendations to really reflect the reality going forward. And so they have, they're taking that into consideration right now, and we're reviewing those revisions right now, going through it. But some of them, the general heading, of course, as I wouldn't mind, they said, housing bond funds were spent in a manner that adheres to the language of the measure approved by the voters. Yes. And that the bond program is operating in a fiscally responsible manner. Yes. So that, we are happy for those words.
That's all you need to see.
We're done.
And really, some of the draft recommendations are really related to programmatic and procedural and more policy types of recommendations. So we're assured that we're all on the right path. It's really interesting to think about going back in time. Really, it's a timepiece in terms of what we were doing, and we did things appropriately. It's just now how we report externally, how we report bond expenditures and creating those bond procedures is really the work we were doing anyway right now with our new GAAP financing model, working with our debt manager, working with OMF, and really creating as much clarity as we can to our developers of here's bond eligible expenses, here's where we're going to put the other kinds of project costs into other sources. So all that, this is resonating with where we are at with our financial oversight. So we will get more into depth and as that audit is finalized, we think in the next couple weeks, and we'll get to that audit when it's all done, and we can talk about it more in April.
Comments or questions? Oversight? Anything left remaining?
No.
Portland Housing?
Thank you.
I have a question though, actually. So I know there's a conversation coming about.
Just turn it off. There we go.
About kind of where we're headed and how we make those decisions moving forward. Is that, I wasn't sure if we were talking about that today, so are we talking about that in the next meeting or future time?
Yeah,
so I think it's been really interesting to consider some of the things that came up today. It's like, wow.
So what we wanted to do is actually, as Molly indicated, is put together, we have initial thoughts, but we wanted to actually put together what we think is the process that we'll ask people to submit to. We don't want random kind of requests that don't feel like everybody has that same opportunity. And anyone who has a project that's approved under the bond, we want to be able to show them, these are the factors we're going to consider if you want to ask for the addition of more units and more bond financing. So we, I think this comes up quite frequently in a variety of different ways throughout our projects, but just because of we want to be very rigorous in terms of process. We will be essentially asking for your advice, but frankly, the decision whether we add the money or not is going to be something that we would look at and then, of course, talk to the mayor. Going back to our old red, yellow, green light, we would not want to make a decision that I don't think we all felt comfortable with. But there are going to be some trade-offs to make. And, starting to go into the uncommitted funds means we may not have a future opportunity. That said, going into the uncommitted funds early may mean adding more units in a really high opportunity neighborhood in 12 months, as opposed to being 2 to 3 years out. But these are all, I don't know that there'll be that many buildings that would be eligible to apply for it, but we want to make sure that there's a clear process and we're not just making decisions that are not, transparent, clear to the development partners, clear to the bond oversight committee, and clear to the community. With the exception, I think, of the 30th and Powell decision, which I think you'll hear more about in April, and have a better, we had hoped they would be able to have a presentation, but we also have some land transaction issues that are ongoing right now regarding that easement that we need to have tightly buttoned up. So when we do, we'll be back and talk with you more fully about that.
Yeah,
did that actually answer your question, Alan?
Yeah, it does. I mean, that's part of the question, but also it's a conversation about remaining funds, and it's that kind of last what-if piece for us. And, you know, I know there's tons of stuff going on. One of the things I've appreciated is how thoughtful you all have been about all of this. And so, and I know that's our next step, and I think, as Mike alluded to, is it does get sort of, you know, again, more difficult as we winnow down to the last pieces, and there are finite opportunities and finite resources, and how do we actually match those up with our final, you know, potentially our final biggest goals, or not our biggest goals, but goals are the goals that now we have an opportunity to reach beyond having already met everything else. And so, you know, what is that opportunity now? And so, yeah, it's amazing to think about that we're in that position. I think it's great. And also, I think this the conversation also about the Metro Bond is really interesting too, and how that fits. So we could stay all day if you want.
We got time.
We do have time. That is true.
But there is also a gift of time.
I'm not mentally prepared for it.
We for the Metro oversight process, we went to the Metro Oversight Committee this week, and they had some recommendations for us. And then we will go to City Council for final adoption on the city side. We actually wanted to make sure we went to the Oversight Committee to get their comments first before finalizing the plan with City Council. And we're hoping that we also have the IGA with Metro in place. The local implementation strategy sets the framework, but we need to address some of the details of flow of funds, approval process, and all of that that comes with working with two government entities. So we're hoping that the LIS and the IGA and another mechanism that'll help us identify funds for rent support come to City Council this spring to allow us to be able to spend the money. Because the strategy is one part of it, but without the mechanisms to actually do project approval or disperse funds, you know, we're not quite there yet with Metro, but we will be very shortly.
And they're new with that.
We're all, yeah. And it's a multi-jurisdictional effort with multi-jurisdictional needs and concerns and target reaching overall. So I think it's a very complex, multi-layered fun challenge.
That's what I find. I think it's infinitely more difficult than this project was because it's got 7 jurisdictions.
Excellent. We have no one signed up for public testimony. I don't know if there was anyone who wanted to say. We did not sign. Okay, wonderful. Well, thanks for coming and being a part of the Bond Oversight Committee meeting. Thanks, everyone, for your good work. Appreciate your time. Have an incredible Thursday.
Great. Thank you. Thank you.